You guys don't have to stand up for this. You realize that, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's the British national anthem.
That's it.
Do they still sing that in schools? My Country, 'Tis of Thee?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, I think if you're in choir.
It was years before I realized we just ripped it off from the Brits.
Melodies are very portable in this day.
All right. That's Felix Bunnell, of course. We're talking place names, geographical features. Mount Baker, Mount Rainier, Puget Sound, all named by one man, Captain George Vancouver, when he explored the Northwest back in 1792. And this weekend, in a tiny village near London, Captain Vancouver will be commemorated, as he is every year, at the centuries-old churchyard where he was buried more than 225 years ago. Good morning, Felix.
Morning, Dave. Yeah, and we've talked about Captain Vancouver many times in the past on these segments. You know, he was very young when he led an expedition to the northwest coast of North America, as they called it in those days. He was just 34 years old. In April 1792, he sailed right past the mouth of that big river south of here. You might know it as the Columbia. Missing the Columbia had long-lasting political ramifications. Some say it led the U.S. to eventually take possession of what's now Washington, Oregon, and California. So it could have been a very different map, and we might be speaking English here on Cairo, Israel. That's a joke, by the way. Anyway, so Vancouver did sail through the Strait of Juan de Fuca into Puget Sound and spent most of May 1792 surveying these waters and placing names we still use today. He returned to England to work on his charts and the narrative of the expedition, which his brother had to complete, because George Vancouver was just 40 when he died in the spring of 1798. Now, Captain Vancouver is buried at St. Peter's Church in Petersham. I visited myself a few months ago. It's a lovely spot west of London, just a short bus ride from Kew Gardens, where I abandoned the rest of my family, to the outskirts of a place called Richmond, which is right along the Thames River. Now, Jean Alsop is church historian for St. Peter's, and there's a lot of history to talk about there.
The churchyard goes all the way back for many, many centuries. The earliest grave that we have on record there is dated the 1700s, but we have three layers of burials there. So it's very, very old. I think the initial impact that most people get is that of peace. It is just so tranquil. A lot of people choose to go and just sit on some of the benches and just, you know, just enjoy the peace and quiet, really.
Yeah, there aren't big billboards or neon signs. It took me a while to find the grave. Honestly, I was on the complete wrong side of the highway. I marched around, wasted a lot of time. But anyway, why would Captain Vancouver be buried at St. Peter's Church in Petersham? Jean Alsop told me that when Vancouver returned to England in September 1795, he was terminally ill. What he was suffering from is a bit of a mystery. It probably was tuberculosis, is what most people think. As for why he's buried in Petersham, the Royal Navy apparently billeted him there. That's, you know, assigned him living quarters in that nearby town of Richmond at a famous pub called the Star and Garter so that he could have a place to finish his work.
At some point, he moved from there down into Petersham Village, and he was a very ill man, and his two brothers, Charles and John Vancouver, were staying with him and looking after him. And, you know, he died there, really, and that's why he's in our parish church.
You know, Petersham's nowhere near where Vancouver was born. Home for him is a place called King's Lynn, which is in Norfolk, about 120 miles away from Petersham. Jean Alsop says Vancouver's family was always connected to the sea, but they were relative newcomers to England.
His father was the customs collector at King's Lynn, which was a big seaport in those days. And in the case of the Vancouver family, they were all engineers, and they came over to help drain the Fenlands, which were very, very swampy, and to make them good arable farming land.
Yeah, they're actually from Holland, so they were Dutch and only been in the UK for about 100 years. Now, so this Sunday, May 12th, is the annual event commemorating Captain Vancouver in Petersham. It's the 226th anniversary of his burial, which actually took place on May 10th, 1798. Now, the current event goes back to the end of World War II as a thank you to Canada for financial support to repair war damage to St. Peter's Church. More than 100 people typically turn out, including some very special VIPs.
We will have the local mayor attending with the councillors. We have some of the descendants of Captain Vancouver's brother attending from Holland. They come every year. The naval attaché from the Canadian High Commission always attends, and he will be laying a wreath on the grave on behalf of Canada.
So it's really sweet. The sweetest thing about this is that the city of Vancouver, BC, actually provides annual financial support for the maintenance and upkeep of Captain Vancouver's grave, and they've done that for more than 50 years. Now, I did some typically hard-hitting investigative journalism north of the border here, got in touch with the city government there, and found out just how much support they provide. for the most recent year. That was April 15th, 2024.
$120.
Close. They sent the equivalent of $378 US dollars. But, you know, it's the grave is very simple. It's in a simple churchyard. It doesn't really need a lot. I guess they do major restoration every 50 or 60 years or so. But in terms of the annual maintenance, that's pretty good for mowing the grass and everything.
Do we know if this Captain Vancouver is a problematic figure in history, or are we okay with this?
Anyone who came to the Northwest as a non-native is problematic.
Okay.
In the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, part of the most recent years, too. I mean, it's native land here. We haven't quite reconciled and figured that out. Vancouver doesn't have the reputation of being a tyrant or anything like that, but, you know, he was doing what he was supposed to do.
Right? Got it.
Now, I really got to hand it to St. Peter's Church in Petersham. They're terrific stewards of this important historical figure. As church historian Gene Alsop told me, you know, it's a complete accident that they have him there, but they're very proud of him. Now, in wrapping up, I had to ask Gene a very American question. You know, is this annual event for Captain George Vancouver on Sunday a big deal?
It is for a little parish church. we're not St. Paul's Cathedral. But, you know, for a little parish church like ours, yes, it is.
Yeah, so get off on the bus and go to the right-hand side of the road.
If you right-hand
go, don't
side of the
go
road.
To the, don't go to the left side and spend 40 minutes wandering all these dead-end streets and on these parks and stuff. It's right near the highway. There's a little handmade sign on the churchyard fence that says, "This way to Captain Vancouver's grave." But I missed the sign. I found it on my own.
Did you drop a Google pin on the map so others can find it too?
I didn't even look. I didn't have cell service in England. I just was looking for. I couldn't find Wi-Fi. I went on the cheap. So anyway, but he's an important figure, and the grave is a really magical little place. I want to thank my friend John Tremaine for going there 4 or 5 years ago and inspiring me to go myself. So anyway, it's definitely worth checking out if you care about history.
Yeah, and you know, in a few years, there's probably going to be even more intense pressure to change back some of these names. Where do you stand on that?
I think Mount Rainier, the name will change. I think they'll change it to Tahoma eventually, probably in our lifetimes. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because it keeps the conversation alive, because history's never finished. It's a dialogue.
Yeah. And the idea, I still think it's amazing that these guys who sailed in thinking it was an empty country could just say, I'm naming this after myself.
I'm not surprised at all.
And it sticks.
Not surprised.
I'm just surprised that it sticks somehow, and I'm really curious as to how that process happens, that everybody decides, oh, we don't even know who this guy is, but this is where we are.
Yeah, and with the English language, there's certain poetry to names like Rainier and Baker and Puget. I mean, it's sort
I
of...
I suppose, it now rolls. That it's so familiar, but...
Yeah, no, it's a terrific debate to keep having continually.
Who would be in charge of changing it to Tahoma?
The U.S. Board of Geographic Names, and the Puyallup tribe is actually engaged in a years-long process to create consensus around the indigenous community about what they would like it renamed. So...
Yeah.
I do think in our lifetimes we'll see a change like that. And it'll be like Denali up in Alaska, but a bigger deal, certainly.
Interesting. Right.
Felix Bunnell, all his features are available anytime at MyNorthwest.com. Will we get to play with TikTok or not? Let's go to CBS Tech contributor Ian Schur. There was a bill passed and signed into law last month that says that TikTok has to be sold from its parent company in China. Otherwise, it gets shut down. Ian, what's the prognosis?
Well, the prognosis now is really interesting, because TikTok has essentially sued the U.S. government, saying that the approach to this law is unconstitutional, that it violates the First Amendment rights that essentially tell the government that it cannot affect our ability to have free speech. And so it's going to be very interesting to see. You know, TikTok says very clearly that they don't believe that they're going to be able to follow what the law is demanding and essentially sell the company so that it's no longer owned by a China-based firm. And so we're facing a potential shutdown on January 19th, 2025.
Unconstitutional. I thought the Congress had passed laws in other industries that limit foreign ownership, no?
Well, they do, and there are conversations that happen like that. However, part of what's interesting here is that this is not just, for example, an oil company or a chip maker or a food company. This is a platform that nearly half the country uses as a form of expression. And so part of what the challenge here is that we're not just talking about the percentage of foreign ownership. The law is essentially saying that the Chinese company ByteDance has to completely divest. They have to sell off TikTok in the United States to someone else. And TikTok says that that's not feasible. That's not actually something that could be done.
What are the actual national security concerns about this app?
You have hit on one of the biggest question marks in this whole debate. For the last few years now, we have heard two presidents, right, not just President Biden, but also former President Trump, argue that there is a national security issue with TikTok. But the government has never made a public accounting of what that issue is. There have been private closed-door meetings that are classified with Congress, where supposedly that case has been made, but the case has not been made to the American public. And part of what I think is going to be interesting about this lawsuit is that it may force the government to actually be able to explain itself, right, and explain what this danger is, instead of merely gesturing at national security as a reason for doing this.
I mean, any guesses? Because we did see what happened with Cambridge Analytica and the social media companies owned by, yeah, by U.S. companies. But what about China? Any guesses?
Well, you know, look, there are examples of social apps that have leaked classified information before.
Right.
My favorite example is a running app that was really popular among military people, right? And it literally would just track your runs and help you kind of, you know, compete with friends and stuff. But it had a map of the United States where you could see where everyone was running. Well, if you zoomed in on suspected classified areas of this country, imagine in the desert somewhere, you could see where people were running around nuclear silos, right? And suddenly, this app was leaking national security.
What app was this? I need to know.
I forget off the top of my head.
Oh,
it was a big story a few years ago. But, you know, it's one of those examples of how these types of things can really cause an issue. And so there is data that comes off of our phones that TikTok collects that, in the wrong hands, could be misused. Does that mean that it's actually being misused?
Right.
There's no indication of that. And by the way, TikTok makes an argument in its lawsuit that if we're going to hold this kind of standard to TikTok, there are many other apps that also,
yeah,
as you point out, Facebook, Twitter, right, all these others that have similar issues. And so why is TikTok being singled out?
Well, everybody needs a boogeyman, and right now it's China. By the way, Strava.
Absolutely.
Strava is the running app. I Googled it for you.
Yeah.
So nobody use Strava.
Yeah. CBS's Ian Scherer.
Well, I mean, they fixed it, so, you know,
good.
It's okay now.
Okay, so Strava's all right.
Thanks, Ian.
Absolutely.
Your Daily Dose of Kindness is brought to you by Heritage Homecraft, and we're taking a look at a small Missouri town where a 91-year-old made a big donation to help his underfunded local fire department. ABC affiliate KMBC in Kansas City reports Sam Sloan is donating $500,000 to the Calhoun Volunteer Fire Department.
It's $500,000, and $500,000. It's a pretty good donation.
Pretty darn good indeed. According to reporter Peyton Headley, the fire department had trucks that wouldn't run, a budget that was too small. Fire Chief Mark Hardin told KMBC he's planning to use the money from Sloan to help buy new gear, replace old equipment, and Sloan says he's just happy to help.
Never in a million years would I ever expected anything like that for a rural fire department.
I'm getting a lot of credit for it, but I don't know how to fix one of them things, but I know how to make a dollar. You know, there's a difference there.
I want to meet Sam Sloan. He sounds like a character. Their old equipment, some that's almost 40 years old, they're going to go to other rural fire agencies until they can find their own Sloan.
G. Scott is here. We're going to talk about the latest track released by Macklemore. He has taken on the war in Gaza. Here's a clip.
Yeah, the people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting and wanting peace? The problem isn't the protests, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Eazy-E. What was it again? Oh yeah, the police. Actors and badges protecting property in a system that was designed by white supremacy. But the people are in the streets. You can pay off Meta. You can't pay off me.
So it's the fault of the police.
Well,
wow.
That was one of the messages.
Well, you know, I'm glad you bring that up. When you put that in there,
he could have done all of that without the F the police.
That's right.
And he'd have been good. But when you did the F the police, you have a lot of people who might even agree with what you're saying. They're out. And even our own Dave Ross came out of that whole thing and came with that. Yeah. Let me say this real quick. First, I am not a Macklemore fan as far as his music, right? Like, there's no way that I could sit there and listen to that. Your boy is already on some Teddy Pendergrass, Earth, Wind & Fire, Frankie Beverly Mace. I'm just done with rap music, period, okay? Mm-hmm. So I want to let everybody know that, one. Even though I am not a fan of his music per se, I am kind of a fan of Macklemore. And the reason why is because of how he's gotten success. He gets a platform and he's not afraid to use or leverage that. Let's go back to 2005 when he made the song White Privilege, right? Mm-hmm. And it was that he was talking about the changing and how we consume rap music in the hip hop world. He was talking about that and how it's changing and that thing. Then in 2014, he made White Privilege 2. That one was in response to police brutality. More specifically, it was about Darren Wilson, who was the officer that shot and killed Mike Brown with Ferguson out there in Missouri. So he made it with that. Then he goes and when it came to the same sex marriage and referendum 74 here in the state of Washington, he came out with Same Love. Mm-hmm. Again, he is someone who is not afraid to say or use his leverage and platform for others. Now, some might say, oh, he's just a liberal. Well, just now he just said, I ain't voting for Biden. You know what I mean? He says, I'm not voting for Biden in this election until they stop what's going on with Gaza over there. So, again, this music is a little... But by the way, I just want to give love to a rapper by the name of Red Veil, who was the first person to use his platform and his music to call out Free Palestine. He's a 19-year-old rapper. He did that in November 12th of 2003. Mm-hmm. So I just want to give him his credit because he is the first rapper to do it. But again, Macklemore's big. He's local from here. Your thoughts on Macklemore?
Well, I think the police part came from the fact, if you look at the video, the song is focused on the tension between the student encampments and the police officers who are cracking down on those encampments. So I think that's where that comes from. He's focusing specifically on the suppression of student voices who are trying to call for a free Palestine. So I think that's where it comes from. Is it helpful to the conversation? Probably not. But I think a lot of the activists like Macklemore who are, you know, won't vote for Biden but want to see a free Palestine are focused on what is so scary about these students raising their voices. No, you shouldn't be trespassing. No, you shouldn't be, you know, vandalizing and causing violence on your campus. But the way police are reacting to these student encampments, he feels is overblown.
I think these protests are empty because they completely ignore Hamas. And if they were living next door to somebody who was dedicated to exterminating them, I think they'd hum a different tune. I'd like them to go over to that part of the country and see how far their free speech gets there.
But when you see the images of the Palestinian children and the families, I mean, that's where the anger comes from. Is, yes, get rid of Hamas. It's a terrorist group, but at the expense of how many Palestinians?
I will say, Macklemore said to quote Q when he talked about F the police. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, yeah. Yeah. All right, guys. See y'all.
See ya.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.